Good evening, everyone. I want to start by thanking each of you for your practice. Know that this path cannot exist without you. And we, none of us, can do it by ourselves. No one else can do it for us. The only way we do this, the only way any of us ever do this, is together. And I just want to say thank you for that. Tonight, I'm going to talk about the Gatha of Atonement, for me, is one of the pieces closest to my heart. As David mentioned this morning, I spend a lot of time with Dharma words, tweaking Dharma words, considering Dharma words. And I'm going to talk about a number of the words in this chant. I'm going to talk about atonement, karma, evil, and vow. And atone. Again. this iteration of the sutra book, we changed the last line from "now I atone for it all" to "I vow to atone for it all." Previous iteration of the sutra book, we changed "all evil karma ever committed by me" to "ever created by me." And I'm also going to talk about the significance of these. So, this is a gatha. A gatha is a short verse used as a point of practice. Our sutra book also has the gatha on opening the sutra, and it has 10 of our Dharma ancestor Robert Aitken's gathas for daily life, Zen vows for daily life, in which each of them has the line taken from the Avatamsaka Sutra, "I vow with all beings." So this is the Gatha of Atonement. This is sometimes called the Gatha of Repentance, which has a slightly different vibe than the Gatha of Atonement. The etymology of these two words, to repent, is to kind of think again, to regretfully disavow. And atonement, the etymology, this is actually a word that's like the word "nevertheless" of three kind of words stuck together. The etymology actually is "at one meant." And in the practice of at one meant, atonement, we are acknowledging, taking in, facing the consequences of, the reality of, the harm we cause in the world. We bring this, practice being at one with that, not pushing it away and holding it separate. Really clear-eyed, letting it in. And sometimes letting it hurt. this chant has to do with karma. Karma refers to this one thing that is actions and their consequences. Actions and their consequences are not separable. Actions and their consequences. As Dogen reminds us, don't imagine that effects follow cause and cause precedes effect. The teaching of karma is that what we do matters. What we do matters. And it is, and karma is brought into being, is created through sometimes called three wheels, body, speech, and thought. The karma of what we do, the karma of what we say, the karma of what we think and how we hold our hearts. And included in this too, please be aware, is the karma of how we speak to ourselves. Don't imagine you get a free pass to speak to yourself in a way that you would never allow someone to speak to a loved one, just because we're aiming it at ourselves. What we do matters. How we hold our hearts matter. Karma is also the conditioning quality of actions and their consequences. One image I sometimes use is the way a wagon wheel will wear a rut on a dirt road. That rut is the karmic impact. And then the more we wear that groove, the more we wear that groove in the road in our mind, easier it is for the wheel to get stuck, and the harder it is to get it back out. Part of what Zazen is the spiritual act of pushing a little dirt back into those grooves, letting us have a little more flexibility, the gradient less steep to falling in, the barrier less high to getting out. We talk about all the karma ever created by me since of old. The beginningless karma. So it's not just personal karma, although there is that. How I use my body, mouth, and mind. There's familial karma, the karma, the conditioning quality of our families of origin, and this karma too is handed down. There's societal and cultural karma. There's a very strong way in which our society and culture affects our minds. And this is why Zen practice is so profoundly countercultural. The karma of our culture says, look away from sickness, old age, death, and suffering. And that karma causes great additional suffering. We look towards it. Cultural karma. And there is evolutionary karma. We are wired by our genetic karma to push away what we don't like, to grab on to what we do, to separate and take as true the fact that we are separate from the universe. And we in the Gatha of Atonement are turning toward and acknowledging being at one with all of that. all of that beginningless karma, which we name as created by me, this one bright pearl of a universe that is me, this one thing that is me and the universe together. And we call this the karma that we speak of in the Gatha of Atonement. We use the word evil. Very provocative and loaded word. And it's very important that we use it. Other versions, it might say all harming karma, all unwholesome karma, all unskillful karma. These are other ways it gets expressed. But we use evil. And we're not alone in this. Evil points to karma that creates suffering. Karma that increases the net amount of suffering in the universe. This is called evil. And evil harming karma only ever comes from three places: greed, anger, and ignorance. All evil karma created by anyone ever is a result of these three poisons, also called grasping, aversion, delusive certainty. And we acknowledge our own harm-causing as evil. Not in the Judeo-Christian sense in which it's a fight against light and dark and good against evil that triumphs in the end and we all win. Or some people win, others lose. We call this evil. We reclaim that word to refer to our karma, because if we don't, we leave it reserved only for others, and we strengthen that divide between us and them, we who are right and fundamentally good. And I will say, and part of the place that compassion arises in Zen is by seeing how quickly, how easily, how thoughtlessly we ourselves, with our deep commitment to spiritual practice, we ourselves can fall into causing harm. We can get sucked in by greed, anger, and ignorance and hurt people, hurt the world. And we see how easy that is for we ourselves. And then when we see others doing that, we are able to know, yes, I am like that too. There but for circumstances, there but for specifics of karma, go I. I would be like that if I were conditioned by those causes and conditions, those effects, those karmic histories. And this teaching has been particularly challenging for me. This is the way that I've talked about karma for quite a while. But in the recent political climate, I really, really, really want to point to that evil over there. And I really want it to be different than me. And in Buddhism, one of the Eightfold Paths is right view. And there are ways of looking at things that are harm-causing, that are unskillful. We don't take, we don't accept, and part of clarifying practice is learning to see through this Dharma view so that we can cause less suffering. And we have had the profoundly lucky opportunity to encounter the Dharma to point us to the ways that we might be causing suffering. And we have inherited the karma, not of our creation or our doing, to be able to care about not causing harm. And it is staggering for me to be trying to wrap my head around people who don't seem to care about causing harm. But that too is a result of causes and conditions. And just as our practice has to be for all beings, we practice on behalf of all beings, as all beings, at one with all beings, especially those beings who, because of their karma, don't and won't and can't practice. And so we do. Bringing in all of our archipelago of connected under the water, beginningless harm-causing karma. Born of my body, mouth, and thought, I vow to atone for it all. I have definitely come around to really liking this this phrasing, I vow to atone for it all. And there's a little shade of ambivalence. I really like the now I atone for it all. It is done on the one hand. It has to be done here, now, this. Like we actually do it now. If not now, when? If not this, what? If not me, who? But there's a way that lets us off too easy. It's not just now. We actually have to live into our atonement. We have to live into continuing to make reparations for our karmic evil. Including the American cultural karmic evil of slavery and segregation and oppression. And we have to not let it just end here on the cushion. We are vowing here on the cushion to continue to live into our atoning. Just as we are vowing in the Bodhisattva vows to save all beings throughout space and time, to enter every Dharma gate. We are rousing the desire of enlightenment, raising the Bodhi mind with our vow to atone, with our vow to save all beings. And I also want to name that this atoning includes falling short. We aspire, we raise the Bodhi mind, we aim at it, use it as a guiding star, like the pole star. And we inevitably fall short, the second leg of a triangle. And then we atone. We bring it towards ourselves give ourselves permission to again return to our highest aspirations. Aspire, atone, fall short. I'm doing a little gesture here, which you can break from your zazen if you want to see it. Aspire, atone. Aspire, fall short, atone. Aspire, fall short, atone. All of that is practice. All three legs of that triangle are practice. And one last word bit about all this. So I think forgiveness is not a Buddhist concept. That's actually a Christian thing. The way we understand that, the way that that works in Buddhism, what we have is not harboring ill will. The, let's say the eighth precept, or the ninth, we vow to not harbor ill will. And then we have the compassionate awareness that all suffering anywhere is only ever caused by greed, anger, and ignorance, and poor suffering beings getting so completely overwhelmed, subsumed, swallowed up by greed, anger, and ignorance that they cause harm, sometimes great, vast harm in the world. And as the Fourfold Commitment to Racial and Social Justice pointed out, we need to address all of that. Part of our atoning for our interdependent, interconnected, harm-causing, evil karma is turning towards these things and living into our values, living into taking action in the service of good. All evil karma ever created by me since of old on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance born of my body, mouth, and thought, I vow to atone for it all. So, please sit comfortably and be invited to come forth into our practice of Dharma dialogue. Coming forth with questions or comments, resonances, complaints, objections, rebuttals. Yes, thank you.
So last May, I was, my legs were run over by a car. And I've struggled with this notion of karma. Because I feel like in pop society, people think that if you do something, you know, bad, then something really bad will happen to you. So, I really appreciated what you said about the wheel, that the wheel, with the dirt, it will just happen, that it will wear out. And, you know, I think about the 18-year-old girl that ran over me, and you know, part of her might think, you know, her karma or whatnot, but, you know, I think ignorance, not paying attention, is really what happened. And there was a point these days here that I kind of felt like, you know, I was lucky that I got run over because different things have happened, you know. So
I just really appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah. There's a saying that our terrible karma can become our wonderful dharma. When I look at my own suffering, there's stuff that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemies, and I wouldn't trade it away. And I also want to pick up on you're pointing to something really important, which is that the actual Buddhist usage of karma is totally, totally different than the pop usage of karma. It actually completely unrelated. Thank you for that.
But I think, too, we've been talking about meeting our life. And all of us here in this room have had to meet our life and will continue. Part of our zendo is crying and sniffling. All of us here together, so wonderful for each of us to meet our life, and so clear. Some things from the ordinary mind, some things are bad, and some things are good. But as we move beyond, as Josh was saying, not that we would wish for difficulty or terrible things, but yet the promise of practice is that if we meet whatever comes, that it will blossom in some way. There is some possibility, some impossible possibility, that's not some sweet idea, but this awakening to a life beyond these ideas of good and bad, beyond this ordinary mind. And here on retreat, we get to, each one of us, meet ourselves in our own way, our whole life here, and some possibility of seeing that things are quite different than we might think they are.
I'm really struck by the gift that you brought into the room of it hurts, it hurts. You know, this is something that all of us in the room, I'm sure, are having different reactions to. Some of us just want to run up to you and take all your pain away because out of our loving hearts, and some of us want to do the opposite and just run out of the room. and this is all normal. This is what it takes a lot of practice to be able to just be with it. It hurts, it's so hard. And the other two modalities that we tend to do, which is the running away and the fixing, are also equally great. You know, they all come out of some kind of a way of coping with the unimaginable. I love that you shared about your displeasure with the current political situation, which is really a real problem for us if we don't like the outcome of the election, because we want to feel like everything's fine and, you know, everything's workable, and maybe some things are not workable. I can't remember who it was, maybe somebody else remembers, a famous Zen master when he was dying. You know, you're supposed to say some great thing when you're dying, and then everybody's going to remember it, and it's going to be, oh man, do you know what he said on his deathbed? And what this one guy said was, it hurts, it hurts.
Yanto.
Who was it?
Yanto.
Was it Yanto? Yeah, I think it was Yanto. So to be, we're developing the capacity to bear that. And we'll do it in all different kinds of ways, and we have to value every way. Mm. So I'm really grateful to you and to everybody for bearing it in whatever way you're bearing it right now. Thank you.
You know, what you said sort of brings up, I don't know, come near enemies that come up for me. And I think, feeling bad, feeling depressed, feeling hopeless, you know, feeling humiliation, feeling overwhelmed, and all those kinds of things. In a way that and this is what our culture does, don't really want to face evil because it's too overwhelming. And so we, lighten it up. And yet it's there. And so I think it's kind of a lot of pretense that we carry about, I think it's going to be fine and so forth. And so we don't get to look at it. And I think it's because of that stuff that comes up for us around it. And could you talk to that a little bit?
So here's the way I'm going to go into that. Our practice has nothing to do with everything's going to be fine. Our practice actually has to do with the radical, radical truth that it's actually fine now, even in its full-blown fuckness. And the fact that it's fine now doesn't mean that we don't also atone and commit ourselves to action and do what we can, where we can, in the amount we can to create good, to bring forth good. All of it, it's actually feeling bad, feeling hopeless, even the arising of depression is actually included. That's fine now. We don't have to turn away even from that. We don't have to necessarily relate to it the way that we're karmically conditioned to relate to it. We can change the way we relate to its arising. But it's actually completely fine for it to arise.
When you spoke of the way we hold our hearts, whether toward ourselves or toward others, toward anything I had in my mind. And that's always something that sometimes comes really natural and sometimes I'm completely oblivious to. It's really strange. And I think...
We're human. Six of one.
When I'm particularly oblivious to it, it's when I'm thinking of a specific, more intimate relationship. But in general, when my relationship is when I'm considering other people's ignorance, greed, and...
anger.
Anger, yeah. And I constantly am weighing out, like just not even on purpose, just this weird resonance or reflectiveness with my own ignorance, greed, and anger, and what I feel like I'm experiencing from another person. And it's very difficult for me to like really know, I don't know how to step into that in the river of action of relationship. I don't know if
what's the that? Step into that? What's the that?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Just
just this, all of us are one, we're all one, everything
is
in this body.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like this neutralizing that's always trying to occur. So, like, because my actions, if my perceptions of someone else's greed, anger, and ignorance are like fueling this weirdness in me, then I can see how I can develop my own particular action or inaction that exacerbates it. And sometimes I really don't know.
Right.
I feel like there's this neutralness that is like, it calls me sometimes to just.
Yeah.
And it's this weird holding. When you said the way we hold our heart, I feel like that's a real front line for me.
Yeah.
Like, of wanting, yearning to understand that.
Yeah. So you said sometimes you don't know, and I want to say yes, and actually noticing that we actually don't know is one of the antidotes to delusive certainty, and actually there's not another kind of certainty. And how we hold our hearts when we do what we can, when we can, in the amount we can. And we atone for karmic evil, inner, outer, in each action. We atone with our sitting. We atone with our walking. We atone with the kindness we bring the checkout clerk. We atone with our broke open heart. And we atone with turning toward the painful uncertainty of not knowing. That's included too.
So maybe that's a good place to stop. Thank you.
Thank you.